Class war, class war.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Primary East, and welcome to another episode of Class War Battlefield Podcast. Start off, I must apologize. It's been far too long since I actually posted one of these. And indeed, you know, I've produced a couple of them. Actually, I've produced probably a couple dozen of them. But I didn't feel like they were worthy of publishing, so I decided not to publish them. Starting next year, or later on this year, I will be publishing podcasts regularly again. And there is going to be a slight change in the format. Instead of, you know, it just being me, you know, talking and giving my perspectives, I'm going to take a page out of Mae Brussell's book. Now, those of you who do not know who Mae Brussell is, she was what one might call a conspiracy theorist, if we were to use today's terminologies. However, really honestly, she was a conspiracy researcher. She was a journalist in the old sense. She made connections, and she looked for links and built a radio show called The World Watchers. World Watchers International, which I don't know if you realized it was funny. She was she often talked about the Nazification of America and the world. And so she was always talking about, in some way, post-WW2, World War II. And her show being World War Internationals was WW1. I don't know if she ever noticed that. But I have been listening to her radio shows. They've been posted online for everybody to listen to, and I've been listening to them for quite some time. Only about a couple of months, but, you know, I recall the first time sitting down and listening to her show and just being overwhelmed by it. I wasn't used to it. Her show is very, very fast-paced. She does sometimes speak about her opinion. Actually, she speaks about her opinion quite a bit, but she speaks about her opinion in the sense of facts. And then once in a while, she'll give, you know, which I gotta actually look up the word, because opinion is something that you place facts to. But then she'll kind of give her little take on everything, and it's quite an amazing show, but I wasn't ready for it. And it took me a while to get used to the information, which, the delivery, the way she delivered her information. But taking a page from her, I am going to look for articles, books, what have you. And I'm going to tie them together. I'm going to talk about them.
and create a picture for you of the class war battlefield, which, ironically, you know, when I first started this podcast, I did not know specifically what I wanted to talk about. All I knew was that, you know, I would have these conversations with people, and they would say, you need to do something with this knowledge that you amass, man. Just, you know, try to get on the radio or even put out a podcast or something. And after a while, I took them up on it and said, okay, you know, I'll put out a podcast. Let's do that. It is, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do, though, and it was, wasn't until, I think, 2012 I started the podcast in September 2011, and it wasn't until 2012 when I started kind of trying to figure out where I wanted to put the podcast in the world of podcasts. And, you know, there's a lot of podcasts, and so I don't expect a huge following. But I did want it to have a certain structure. And Mae Brussel has kind of shown me the best way to do an informative podcast. And I think the Class War Battlefield is in her vein. You know, that's... Originally, I was going to call the podcast Observations of the Class War Battlefield. But I shortened it to Class War Battlefield because I just thought it sounded better. You know. And so I think this is where I ultimately always wanted to be. And so, this is where I'm at. Alright, so, with all that said, let's move on with the show. There has been a lot going on. My God, everything from Israel, Palestine, to the recent riots in Missouri. And I actually want to, I got to start with the riots in Missouri because the news, CNN at least, I watch CNN every day at work. I don't care for TV in my apartment, so I don't have it. But CNN, the same week of the Missouri riots, of course, Robin Williams died, and CNN covered Robin Williams' death as, you know, a major personality, now dead, understandable, I see that, but they glossed over Missouri. They talked more about Palestine in Gaza. Or Gaza, really, because Gaza's in Palestine. Then they did Missouri. And I was wondering about that. I was, you know, thinking about that. I said, okay, maybe they don't want to glamorize it so people don't riot. And then I thought about their coverage of Gaza. And how they did glamorize Gaza. They glamorized Israel in Gaza and went out their way to always make excuses for Israel. And I said to myself, well, wait a minute. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. It better be, at least. Because if they're not trying to allow riots to break out by glamorizing this riot, by talking about it too much, then they likewise shouldn't really be covering Gaza, or at least shouldn't be making up excuses for Israel, because Israel then, you know, it becomes okay for Israel to continue doing what they're doing. Now I know, you know, you're all going to say, but wait a minute. CNN is Propagandaville, man. Come on. That's what they do. So, of course, they got to stick up for Israel. I see that. I understand. I get that. But back up from the propaganda standpoint for a moment. And really think about what it means for an American news network to take or to ignore what could be a defining story. You know, I started thinking. I believe the first race riot, what they call a race riot, because there were race riots before that, but the rioters were white, and they were actually rioting against blacks. But what they call the race, I'll say the first ghetto riots of the 60s, I think it was 64, was the first one. There was only a couple of them that year, but, you know, I was thinking, because I remember my research with Martin Luther King, the news was talking about these riots and what it meant for the nation and what it meant for, you know, why were they happening? And I was thinking, well, what if CNN was around back then? I'd imagine that they would have ignored it. And nothing would have actually, a national dialogue would have never started. So, it floored me. It floored me. What was even worse was HLN. Early in the morning, they have a co-host who's black. Well, chocolate anyway. And again, they just mentioned and ran right past Missouri and started talking about, you know, Hollywood. And this absolutely floored me. You know, Martin Luther King used to say that the politicians in the 60s had Pig Nero for their patron saint and was bent on fiddling while the cities burned. And I actually think, you know, if Missouri is a example, I think Dr. King was a little hyperbolic. Because the response to Missouri has been almost complete denial. And this is important because Missouri is saying something. That riot is saying something that needs to be said. There is a generation of children who are now young adults. And when I say young adults, I'm talking 16 years old and up. Who have been completely dispossessed by this country. But it's even worse than just being dispossessed by this country. Because not only are they dispossessed, but they are being told that it's their fault that they have been dispossessed. As the structures which were meant to sustain society have been either privatized or eroded so private interests could take control of them, what has been lost is the fact that the people who rely on those services need those services. So instead of being citizens, all these people now are just customers. And if you are a customer or a consumer, the job of the person who's selling you the service is to make sure that you need it continuously. Capitalism is the drug addict's system. They need you to continuously need it. So, for instance, if you are charged with educating people, which this is a major privatizing scheme right now, this is going on across the country. If you're charged with educating people, it behooves you to only educate them to a certain extent. Because then they have to go to another school, which you might own, to get more education, which then you only educate them a little bit more because then, hey, they have their skills to go out and get a job, but as they grow in that job, they're going to need more education, meaning they're going to have to come back to you. So you have a whole generation of dispossessed youth who are being told that it's their fault why they are dispossessed. They have also been the victims of massive, massive mind control. And when I say mind control, I'm not talking about the zombie mind control. I'm talking about, you know, people like to talk about how the youth feel self-entitled. This is a form of mind control. When you look at television and you look at what these children are watching, self-aggrandizement is a huge part of what they are, what they're taking in. They're Americans, and they should be proud because America is the greatest country. But not only is America the greatest country, if you are Christian and you are American, then my God, you are so superior than everybody else. If you are black and you act this way, then man, you got swag, and you got this, and you got that, and you are the baddest person on the planet. So you got, a lot of people say, oh, well, they feel entitled. No! They have overinflated egos. There ain't no entitlement there. Oh, well, they feel like they should have this and they should have that. No. They know that they should have this and know that they should have that because television. I'll give you a great example. My nieces, back a few years ago, used to watch iCarly. Didn't really care for the show, but on a few occasions, I was pulled in to watch it with them because I'm an adult. And I was watching the show, and I turned to my oldest niece, and I said, where do these two girls get the money that they have to pay for this beautiful apartment? Oh, well, they have an internet show that's really, really popular. And in my mind, I'm doing the math. I'm saying, man, if you have an apartment that looks like theirs, staffed with all the stuff that it is staffed with, or stocked with, excuse me, you have the computer, you have this camera, which of course I know one of their friends used to bring it over, but this camera that is, my God, probably a $8,000-$10,000 camera that they're using. And yet, you're paying for all this via your website, which is very rare. This apartment that they live, that they're living in, which has a doorman. I know their father is in the military, but I'm going to imagine that's still all of that, you know, you're probably paying $2,000 or $3,000 for that apartment. Where are they getting this money from? And so it just, the few, what the Disney Channel and what Nickelodeon and many of these shows are teaching children is to expect a lot without doing a lot. So they have high expectations of the outside world, but low expectations of themselves. So you have a crisis in the youth. You have a deep crisis. And nobody wants to deal with it because market principle says you can't regulate. The riots, of course, are not just about dispossessed youth. There's a whole, I just kind of molded that in there. Because I do, you know, dispossession is a problem in the ghetto, but there's this whole other string of issues which play out in the inner city, which should be discussed on CNN and on MSNBC and on Fox News. I already know how they spin it on Fox News, though. I don't hold my breath for that. I have not yet been able to see what the actual unemployment rate is for the city. I think it's St. Louis, if memory serves me correctly. It might have been right outside of St. Louis where this happened. But I know I was reading an article less than a year ago where the government admits in most cities, young people under the age of 25, they are suffering from an unemployment rate, this is in black communities, of 40% or higher. In some inner cities, you have a male unemployment rate of people below the age of 25 and younger. You have an unemployment rate of 75%. Insane. How are people supposed to live? Are they supposed to live? And then on top of that, of course, what sparked this was the unarmed death, the shooting death by the cops, you know, of an unarmed young man. And what's going to be done about it? I wrote on my Facebook page yesterday, couple days ago, actually, that I would hope Mr. President, Mr. Barack, I'm the president of everybody, Hussein Obama, Mr. I can go to white communities and talk about unemployment, but I will never go to black communities and talk about unemployment. Mr. I can stand before black people and tell them, you know, you need to shape up, Negroes. But I ain't never going to tell white folks that they need to do something to benefit the whole society. I would hope that that supposedly half-black president, who does everything to deny that he has a drop of black blood in him until he needs to wave it and flaunt it for some purpose that has little to do actually with his blackness, but so he can identify with the person. I hope he would finally use his voice to speak about the true plight of the black man in this nation. So yeah, I haven't heard anything yet, though, so I'm not holding my breath. I'm not holding my breath. But he needs to, even though he won't. He has that bust of Martin Luther King, you know, sitting in his office. It, you know, when he put it in there, I knew it was just a show. I remember talking to a woman about that. It's like, man, isn't it great that he put Martin Luther King, you know, right there in his office? You know, it's going to be great. I know you have to be excited because you love Dr. King. And I said, no, I wish he'd take it out of there. And she was shocked. What are you talking about? Why would you say that? And I said, because it doesn't mean anything to him. It doesn't mean anything to him. And then when he got the Nobel Peace Prize, of course, she was, well, look, just like Dr. King, he got the Nobel Peace Prize. And I said, he didn't do anything to deserve it. So, you know, it... I would hope he would speak about it. You know, a year ago, we had Smiling West to talk about these issues. And now we don't have really anybody nationally to talk about these issues. And we need a Smiling West. I mean, both of them seemed pretty dang conservative up until recently, but we still need it. Because the things that are going on in these communities, I'm wondering, I'm worrying, I'm concerned that Missouri won't be the first, that St. Louis will not be the first, that we are moving into a period of time where we will repeat what happened in the 60s. The only difference is the government has deprived Black America of true black leadership. And instead of having dialogue, they only know how to do one thing. And I'm sorry to the people who are listening who are of European descent. But it is something that even you need to face. Your leaders have always been war obsessed. And because of that, they have made most of you war obsessed. And the response to these problems, which the Department of Defense know, they've talked about it, they've released studies about it, they know these problems are coming, that means the government knows they are coming, and the response will be warlike. We need more cops. You don't need more cops, you need to figure out how to do away with poverty. We need more guns. Are you seriously? We need to have a national discussion. It won't happen. I know this. I know this. I know the psychopaths over at Fox can't have a normal discussion with anybody. I know the suits over at MSNBC will do everything to placate and to minimize the importance of what's actually going on. You know, it's funny to me. You know, I got to talk about this because it's connected to it. People often talk about how different conservatism and liberalism is. There is really no difference between conservatism and liberalism. There isn't. Both of them like the way that society is structured. They just don't want the suffering. Conservatives, the difference between conservatives and liberals is conservatives will thumb their nose up and openly admit that they would prefer to just pass by the homeless and, you know, it's their problem that they're homeless and, yada, yada, yada. You know, it's the royalty principle. Whereas liberals, like, well, you know, we don't want that much suffering. The society can do away with some suffering. There'll always be suffering and poverty, but we can do away with a little bit of it, you know, just as long as I get to hold my privileged position. And that's where both of them are at. They just want to hold their privileged position. And you see it on MSNBC, and you see it on Fox News. They're blatant hypocrites on both ends. Blatant. Blatant. Now, once in a good while, you'll get people on both sides that are really decent people. A lot of people hate it when I say it, but I consider Keith Olbermann one of those good people. I liked David Schuster. I can't think of his name from Fox News now. Younger guy, though. I can't think of his name, though. Shepard. I think is his name. Shepard. I liked him. And, you know, aside from that, it was a trip. Both sides, it's all about holding up the system. In conclusion, you know, I'd like Obama to talk about this, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I want to thank you for joining me, like I said. Later on this year, early next year, I'm going to be, you know, definitely changing the format to this. And hopefully I should be publishing more about that. All right, ladies and gentlemen, contact me, classwarbattlefield@live.com. I love you all. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands. And we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a prison.